This episode of Knights of Degradation may not be suitable for children or impressionable adults. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, so we're not doing a normal episode tonight. Something we talked about when we started the Knights of Degradation is that we did want it to be heavily focused on the actual gameplay of a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, but we thought kind of having these open discussions was really important, and you guys kind of all agree with me, which I'm super stoked about. And we're going to call them dialogues because it really is just a chance for us to sort of talk a little bit about ourselves and our past, present, and future when it comes to Dungeons & Dragons, or just kind of creativity in general. And I thought a really good topic for sort of our first get together would be how we all got into Dungeons and Dragons, because I think almost everybody I've talked to has sort of an interesting or really personal story as to their first campaign or how they heard about it. And I just think that'd be a good way to sort of get to know everybody here. So if you guys are cool with that, we'll just jump right into it. Anybody want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
So I started in high school. I was a sophomore in high school. You know, I've never been the most popular person. Middle school was rough for me, and starting in high school was probably the first time that I've had really consistent friends. So when they mentioned to me that they wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons, it was honestly a great experience, because I had heard of it before, but I had never really done anything with it. And so like 8 of my friends packed into a dank basement, and we played our first game of 3.5 around a pool table, which was what we used to use dice and whatnot. And of course, none of us had any dice except for the person who got us into D&D. And we didn't even play with actual characters that we made. We made ourselves in 3.5, and we played through an apocalyptic scenario. So we were all friends at this time, really good friends too. But we just started by playing as ourselves, because that was the easiest. We didn't have to even really be creative. We just played as ourselves, chose what we wanted our quote unquote characters to do. And that was it. It was a lot more fun than I was ever expecting it to be. And that's, I've been playing ever since, pretty much. And it's been about 10 years now. So
what edition was the first one?
It was 3.5, which is really weird, because like, giving myself sort of skills and stuff like that was really hard to do. So, but we did it, and it was a 16-hour session, and we, completed the goal in one session, and that was the end of it. I mean, it was a great first impression. Very unforgettable, however homebrewy and wrong it was, but it always will hold a special place in my heart. So.
Absolutely. And I love that you said it was on a pool table. I don't know about you other guys, but it was like, I played Dungeons & Dragons for years before we played on an actual table. It was like pool tables. The big one was a buddy of mine's basement was a ping pong table, and that was like the D&D table. Like, it wasn't until I'm almost this actually is the first like real table that I played on. It's always been like picnic table, or one time we played and everyone had their own like TV dinner tray and we all sat in a circle. Like, stuff like that was pretty cool, but it always seems to start with some other sort of this whatever you can play on. Mm-hmm. For sure. You still play with any of the people you started with?
Yeah, actually. So I fell off of, for reasons I won't get into, I fell off with a lot of the people that I initially started playing with. My best friend is, I still play with him to, through today. And recently I reconnected with some of the old members of our group, and we went over to his old house, because he has a new, it was his parents' house, And right before he moved into his own place, and we went down back into the old basement and played on the pool table again, just the four of us. It was very nostalgic, and you know, brought back a lot of good memories.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. I've reconnected with a few people that I used to play D&D with, and I just remember one of them. I was like, "Hey man, do you still play Dungeons & Dragons?" He's like, "Nah, I switched to Pathfinder," and then I just quit talking to him. Well, you guys want to jump in? I mean, do you guys have a specific memory around your first time playing?
Yeah, sure. My first campaign I ever played, I only ever really played, I think it was 1.5 sessions to be fully 100% honest, but I think I only really remember the first session. It was a basic fighter, it was 5e, but it was based around a popular and probably well-known, at least in the community of D&D, setting, and it was based around the Acquisitions Incorporated crew. So I don't know if you know much about them, but I didn't at the time. I just knew that this was a role-playing game. I really liked Skyrim. I really liked RuneScape, video game style role-playing games. And I decided, you know what, I'll give this a shot. My high school buddies are playing it. They're all having a great time. Let me just see what this is all about. And at this time, I had not gotten to voice acting or any kind of acting at that time. So I was still very not confident with my voice or even being in character as somebody else. So I pretty much played myself the best I could. It was a fighter, gladiator is what he was. That was his backstory anyway. But the first session, I didn't know what I was doing. So I was just kind of watching and listening, and apart from not knowing anything, just watching all the interactions, watching these other players who've been playing for at least a little while kind of be somebody else and live in this world that I couldn't even see, it was really definitely interesting to me and made me want to play more. But then when I couldn't show up for the whole session of the second session, the DM just killed my character off and I didn't play again. I was like, well, is that what D&D is all about? You have to be there and you're dead otherwise? But then a good buddy of mine, he and I still play together. He's actually in two of my campaigns and I'm in one of his. He DM'd for me in this first like revival, and it was Pathfinder, but...
Get out.
Pathfinder's okay. Don't you knock it, Cole.
But it kind of reinvigorated the imagination and the lack of D&D that I good experience of D&D that I didn't have that first time, and it really kind of got me going again. And that was the first session I ever played with my wife, and that's how she got into it, and we've both been playing ever since. So.
That's really cool that you play with your wife. I know my wife has like shown interest in playing, but I still kind of have this nervousness about like connecting those two worlds, I guess. My D&D side, which I do take, you know, semi-seriously, and then my marriage, which is more important than anything else. And I would hate to like not lose D&D, but like if she totally hated it and didn't understand it, it's pretty much the same reason why I don't play Pokemon as much anymore, because she just doesn't get it and doesn't like it. So if I'm sitting there playing and she looks at me and sighs, I'm going to feel bad. So like, how was that? Did you run into any issues like that? Or did you two just like start playing no problem?
It was definitely odd for her at first. I mean, I think she had a very similar experience that I did. Didn't know what she was doing. Didn't know how this game worked really. I don't know that for sure. I haven't really ever asked her that question, I guess. But what really got her into it was the connections we made with our friends and just how that game kind of brought us closer. It gives us something that new to talk about. Gives us, and I got to tell you, the way she's changed just from playing D&D is phenomenal. She used to be so quiet and kind of reserved as her character, but now she's playing these wild, chaotic characters, and it's so funny as a DM to watch how she's grown from kind of this reserved, probably like typical paladin or cleric to this almost barbaric savage of sorts.
Well, you know, it's really funny that you say that, because my roommate she played D&D with her brothers growing up. She, I guess play is a strong word, because she didn't really play. She watched, and she thought it was cool, and she intervened a few times. She had a few characters, but you know, she's a person who loves fantasy, but is more into the mythical creature aspect. She's into like the fairies and stuff like that. So I was fully expecting her to go into D&D with me the first time, wanting to play something more, I guess, fantastical, like maybe a satyr or a centaur or something like that. And she goes straight for the neck and chooses a lizard folk. And I was like, are you sure you want to be a lizard folk? And she was like, yeah, I want to be a lizard folk ranger, and I want my weapons to be made of bone. And I was like, oh, is this the monster I've created? And then the second character she made was a changeling rogue. And I was like, you're just going crazy on these, aren't you? And she was like, yeah, I really like
it. It's so cool to play with people who've never played before, and they're a little reserved. And then there's some people who start out like really calm and timid. And then there's some people who just kind of see an opportunity to do things that they themselves wouldn't do. So they just go crazy. Now, never forget, we played with a lady in college who had never, I think she might've played a few times before, but never with our group. And she played a drow. And we're all, I guess, I forget the setup, but we were all like captives in the Underdark, and we're walking out, and like the guard tries to stop us and we kill him. And she just looks around. She's like, I'm going to take a bite out of him. And everyone just got real quiet. Like, what? She's like, yeah, I'm going to start eating him. Actually, he had like some head damage. She's like, can I see his brains? And the DM was like, I guess. He's like, yeah, I'm going to start eating him. I was like, what the fuck? Like, why would you do that? She's like, I don't know. It's a game. I'm like, oh, okay. It's nice to meet the real you. But I kind of like that aspect. And I know when I play, I try my best to totally role play. And you probably do this too. Like, you know, we've acted together and stuff. Being an actor, it's a little bit easier to get into character, mm-hmm. I guess. But for people who aren't used to that, I admire it when I see them try out so many different things, regardless of how wild and crazy it is.
Yeah, I think the most rewarding thing for me as a DM who loves to role play is getting the players who don't normally partake in the role play to suddenly be totally invested in this conversation between the NPC and their character, and just evolves or flowers into this wonderful thing.
And you know, it actually takes a really good DM to be able to do that. A lot of people who start the game reserved and unsure of what to do, they won't role play for a while, and it really takes like a good DM or a very open mindset, sometimes both, in order to get a person to actually come out and decide that they want to play the game I don't want to say the way it was intended, but the way that like most people do. And it's just really nice to see like super timid people, like how I used to be, attribute a lot of their personal success and growth to tabletop games. It's just wonderful to see.
We talked a little bit right when we decided to start this, and I remember asking you specifically if you were involved. I don't know if you remember me telling you, but an old player of mine came into the store, and I'll just kind of tell you guys a story. I don't know if I've told you yet or not, but essentially when we started playing in high school, we had a pretty large group, and we just tried to get as many people involved as we could. My high school was I don't want to say not your typical high school, because I don't know how other ones were, but it's not what you see in like TV and movies and stuff. Everyone got along, and everyone just kind of respected and loved each other. So it was real cool. We'd have this insanely wild group of people playing D&D together that don't really talk in any other aspects. And there was this one kid who, I won't use names or anything, but he didn't really talk at all, like for the first year of high school. Like we knew his name and that was it. He just was really quiet and really reserved. And I forget how it came about. I think he lived down the street from where we were playing, so we invited him to play, and he showed up. And he started out pretty timid, and I remember his character was a paladin. And he was a religious person, I think, and you know, in the real world, so it's kind of easier to, again, kind of bridge that gap when you can play a character that has similar moral values to you. And then after a couple sessions, man, he just totally let loose, like, in the best possible way. And he became the strongest player of our group, period. The best role player. Dude was an absolute genius. So when it came to, like, skills and math and everything like that, he was just on it. It was 3-5. So I still have a hard time wrapping my head around 3-5 stuff. But eventually, he got his brother to play. And his brother was a little more outgoing than him, but still not on the level that I guess he was when it came to the role playing. But his brother got involved. And again, like these two guys who I never would have talked to otherwise ended up being two of the people that I probably loved the most in high school, loved spending the most time around them and always wanted to hang out with them, whether it was with D&D or not. So we played that campaign for a long time. I think it was like 2.5 to 3 years or so, and ended up growing to like 16 players and 2 DMs. Like it was a great experience. But then years and years pass, and then we're in the store together, and this guy comes in, and I go up to him, and I'm like, hey, man, how's it going? You know, assuming he wouldn't recognize me. And he does recognize me right away, and then he starts telling me about how he remembers playing D&D, like down in my buddy's basement, and just how great it was and how impactful it was to be able to play with his brother. And now those two and their other two brothers, almost any time they get together, they play Dungeons & Dragons together, and he said it is like the most ultimate bonding experience they've had, and how it's just been great to come together and I guess bond with your family in a way that you wouldn't really think. And I've always, like, the way I started playing D&D was with family, and it was during times where I needed to bond with family, and I've always seen it as that, but not a lot of people do. And he just started telling me about how grateful he was for playing in high school and stuff and getting into it, because it's really had a big impact on their family. And I was almost in tears. I think I came up to you after, and I was just done for the day, because that was so impactful for me to hear. And again, that just goes along with what kind of you were talking about. It's really this, and especially like you and your wife, you just talked about being able to see your wife kind of in a new light in certain aspects. And that's really cool, because you marry somebody, you pretty much, or at least you probably should know everything about them. So it's just awesome.
Mm-hmm. When my dad was younger, he played D&D with his family, and he had a really bad experience with it. This was like way back when, you know, like first and second edition. And his brother, and a few of our cousins would play, and they just would treat him like dirt. You know, they wouldn't let him play the character he wanted. They wouldn't let him play the race or the class he wanted. He had to be the dwarf, and he had to be the ranger. And my dad, or a gnome rather, I think, I can't remember if that one, a very short race is what I remember specifically. And he just didn't have a good time with it. So I've been trying to convince my dad since I got into D&D to play with me. And I think he's starting to crack. So dad, if you're listening to this, you know, I'm always open to play a game with the old man.
Who knows? Maybe we'll have him on here.
Hey, that'd be cool.
Maybe we'll do a family takeover where like our moms and dads come in and play. I don't know.
My parents won't be here.
Yeah, I was thinking, I don't know how either of my parents would. I think my mom finally understands like my love for D&D, and like she's been nothing but supportive as we're doing this. And I love my dad to death, but I think there's still some reservations there. But I will say he's at least acknowledged how D&D has helped me with other aspects of my life, like as far as like doing the theater stuff and being more outgoing and things like that. So he said kind of breaking down little by little. Eventually he'll be on here DMing maybe your guys' family.
That would be awesome.
Real quick, can we do a mic check on John's mic?
Mic check, 1, 2. Okay. Hello.
I was making sure it works, brother. I'm sorry.
It works. I was just listening. I'll say it was nice and a natural conversation that was going real well.
Well, what about you, man? I know you've been playing like the least amount of time out of all of us. So like what kind of got you in, or what made you show interest in D&D?
Well, I've had interest in it for years. I've had buddies that I played video games with that I'd play with every single night, and just randomly out of the blue, they'd be like, oh no, I'm not getting on tonight. I'm going to go play some D&D. And at first, I didn't even know what that meant. I was like, okay. So then I found out it meant Dungeons & Dragons. And then after a while, I found out like what that actually meant. Originally, I thought it was LARPing. didn't know that it actually was a tabletop game. And then it turned into, I sat down and watched them play one night. Didn't understand at all what they were doing. And then we end up finding Divinity Original Sins, I think is what the game's called. Played a little bit of that with them. And then moved from Georgia to Ohio. And I was like, well, I need to regain my I need to, well, be social and actually make a new friend group around here. And then that's when I started talking with other people around work and found out that some people at work were playing D&D, and I was invited. So I started, showed up. First experience was very, realized there's a lot to learn. It was very overwhelming.
But yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Was it fifth edition?
It was fifth edition. Okay. So it sounds like 3.5 is a lot worse. So I got off lucky.
I mean, there's
more math
give and takes with these. Yeah, 3.5, it just has more math involved and the skills can kind of get convoluted. And I know people who explicitly will never play D&D because of how sort of difficult character creation was in 3.5.
But yeah, so then played, what did we play, 3 sessions?
Yeah, it was 3.
We had 3. And then, I mean, I had fun. And then as soon as my buddies that I play video games with found out that I was playing with a couple people in real life, then they turned around and wanted to play one on Roll20. So then I started up a session with them. And I'm just starting up my second session with them because we decided to pick up more people. And for some reason, they didn't want to just continue on the session and pick up more people. They wanted to make everyone fresh. So just started that again. As far as what got me into playing it was literally just to get to meet people and try something new. And been enjoying it since. Even bought my own set of dice recently. So
I've seen those. Yeah, those were really nice dice, actually. I don't know why I said actually. I didn't like expect them to be terrible.
Well, I actually didn't have high hopes
for them. I was going to say, when I said they were $10 for metal dice, I'm pretty sure most of the people in the room were like, yeah, those are going to be pretty bad. I was surprised.
I guess I'm just a dice elitist, which is rough for me. But I guess I didn't realize it, but I guess I must be.
I think so. I've always suspected your prejudice against lower quality dice.
Oh, man.
So if I were to show you that dice, like you've seen them, would you think that they were $10?
Probably not.
So in your, now this is sort of branching off, but just keeping the conversation natural, what to you makes a good dice?
Design, really?
Well, for one thing, you don't want them to roll the same thing consistently unless it's a 20.
So dice statistically have the same amount of chance to land on the number that you want as you don't, right? So there's a 1 in 20 chance that you're going to get one of these numbers every single
time. Yeah.
And I'm very superstitious as a person, so when I get a dice and I roll it for the first 10 times, if it's higher than 10, it's a good dice. Other than that, it's mostly just design. Like, if I see a set of metal dice and they're less than what I paid for my metal dice, I'll probably be like, I don't know if those are, like, you know, a very high quality, like, what kind of metal they were made from, if they're weighty, you know, that sort of stuff. Because weight, especially with metal dice, can be a major factor. Even the metal dice that I have, it feels almost the exact same, but the edges are a bit curved, so it'll roll better. Yeah, so yours are just solid. So that means, like, the number that they land on, then that's the number they're staying on, likely, especially with, like sixes and the lesser-sided dice. So that sort of makes a good dice to me, is rollability as well. So
it has to do with a die, but I know the day we started doing this, I forget who was going to get here first, but you were almost here. I think it was you, because you texted me that you were here waiting outside. And I was just super nervous because it was our first night recording stuff. And I took out my pink set of dice, which I have them because they're pink and I'm super manly. I rolled it and I was like, is this gonna work? And it landed on 20, which I was pretty stoked about. Can't remember if I told you guys that or not, but it was pretty.
That's
pretty
super awesome. Cool.
So I have two sets of dice, my pink and white and my gray and yellow. And the reason I've kept those is because, yeah, they've never like totally screwed me ever. Now I'll say that and they're going to soon, but really they've just always been in good shape. And I care about just the overall quality, so if they start to like get chipped and stuff, I'll retire them and just put them in a drawer or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I also have certain character dice. You know, with my first and favorite character now being retired because he achieved his goal and whatnot, his set of dice, I've retired most of them, and I probably won't use them very much again. I still use the 20 because it's lucky to me. All of the other dice, I actually have hidden away somewhere because that's like the end of his journey, the end of the dice, and they were only $10 anyway, so like I can get a new set of dice. Yeah, that's no big deal. But yeah, that's I'm a very superstitious person, and D&D absolutely is no exception to that.
Now I don't know if you would remember this, but do you guys remember the third edition like starter kit that came with that really terrible like red like fake leather pouch, and it had those red dice in it? Those were like my first ever dice, and they're the worst ever. So I think I just, everything since then has just been a total upgrade. Because when the first time I played, it was third edition, like 3.5 hadn't come out just yet, and I was never really allowed to play. My brother and my cousin, who lived with us at the time, played D&D just about every weekend, and I think it got to a point where my brother was supposed to watch me when he was going to go play. And he just decided to take me with him. And that was my first experience. And it was just sitting there watching. And this was when I was in third grade. So I can't really remember how old I was, but I was in third grade. And I just thought it was really cool. Just kind of sort of, you know, just a bunch of friends sitting around a table, sort of joking and telling stories and stuff. And ever since I've been little, I've always been an old man. So the idea of just sitting around and bullshitting is like my favorite thing to do. But that was kind of my experience. And I kept asking like, hey, can I play? Can I play? And no one really wanted me to, because they were all, you know, in high school and I'm like a little kid. But my cousin actually let me make a character, and I'll never forget. I don't know why he made my first character a druid. I guess just to fuck with me, I suppose. But yeah, we made my first character, and when the party sees him, they're like trying to head into this like forest village, and they can just see this person, but they can't see what it is or who it is. So they spent like a few hours deciding on how to approach this person that was standing there. And I think there was one other person with me. The reason it took so long is because my cousin, who was the DM at the time, was like super hardcore and would just kill people instantly for making bad decisions. So it took forever to do the most mundane thing to make sure they didn't die. And then I remember when everyone found out it was me playing, they were super pissed. Like, they just didn't want me playing with them at all, which I kind of get. It was just, you know, it all just kind of happened at once. And it was this really, I was at an age where I needed like male role models and needed male bonding, and I just wasn't getting it. And D&D really helped me with that. And, you know, I had to do like speech therapy and stuff when I was younger, and I didn't really talk to anybody, and I didn't really know how to talk a lot. And D&D's sort of was the upswing of me now being able to talk a long time and, you know, talk for a living essentially. So, but I remember those red die being the absolute worst ever. I remember taking them to school and showing people and like telling them about D&D, and they're just like, these look stupid. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
I think that everybody's first character and first set of dice are the most special. I have, my first set of dice were the dice I have for my first character. And so I will like freak out if I lose them because they're so special to me. I also have, and I plan to frame my first dice bag because everybody that I know who played D&D with me when I first started, all of their dice were in Crown Royal bags.
Yeah, that's like a thing when you're like a teenager, I think. Yeah. It's really cool having Crown Royal. And I actually, so I drank Crown Royal when I was a teenager, and I remember keeping all my dice in a bag, and I was like the cool guy with the Crown Royal. But that's like such a staple.
Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed the bag you have now, that's even Crown Royal colors.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so that's actually, I mentioned that when I got the dice bag. I was like, man, this reminds me of the Crown Royal bag.
Right.
I know that you, John, probably don't, you know the sentiment, but like the Crown Royal dice bag is like a classic for poor people who want to play D&D.
I forget the group. It was a group I only played with once, and this guy showed up with like the Crown Royal special edition bag, which was all black, and it said Crown Royal in black, and everyone just thought he was the biggest fucking coolest guy at the party because he had the black Crown Royal bag.
That's actually really funny because we used to play with one of my old friend's uncle a lot, who played D&D since it came out. His name's Scott, and he likes to drink a lot, and so we'll have to stop games at the end of the night at like 1 a.m. because he'll just be too absolutely blasted in order to continue. And I remember seeing his dice bag for the first time, and it was awesome. It was a green Crown Royal bag.
Ooh, that's the one I used.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I was like, here I am with this purple one that looks regal and nice, but he has green, and I don't even like the color green, really, but it was awesome. I remember that was like the first alternative dice bag that I ever saw, and it was still made by the same company who probably never intended for people to use their special drawstring.
Talk bags about a missed like marketing opportunity.
Right. I think they do it on purpose now.
Well, it's funny because I didn't know Crown Royal bags were used as dice bags. My dad runs a radio station here locally in northern Ohio, and whenever they go to cover their mics when they're not using them, they use Crown Royal bags. And I was like, that's a pretty neat idea. I'm just going to use those for dice. And then found out that it was actually a thing. So, and then I started drinking Crown Royal. I was like, why didn't I do this before?
You know, so I've never been a drinker. I can't tell you anything about alcohol or anything like that. And I remember picking up the Crown Royal bag that was covered in cat fur, or dog fur, rather, because my friend had a giant German Shepherd. Brushing it all off, getting everything taken care of, and reading the Crown Royal inscription and being like, what's Crown Royal? And then I found out that, like, I was in Walmart and they were selling Crown Royal, and I was like, what? the dice company makes alcohol?
That is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
I actually have fun memories with Crown Royal because I started drinking super young. I was like 12 when I started drinking like hard liquor, which is not good. Like, I'm not endorsing that at all. But Crown Royal was how I got caught. And I had done it for like a couple years without anyone really knowing, just like sneaking drinks and like stealing from family and stuff, which, again, not endorsing that at all. But my mom and her boyfriend, or I don't even think it was a boyfriend, just a male friend of hers, asked me to come into the kitchen. And I had constantly stolen drinks of Crown Royal that she had in the freezer. And he's like, hey, I want you to try this. You know, you're almost, I think I was like 14 at times. Like, you're almost a man now. I want you to try this. And I took a shot of Crown Royal, not remembering that my first time drinking Crown Royal, it burnt worse than the taste of a thousand suns. Like, it just burnt so bad. But this time I just drank it, no problem. And and I didn't realize that would absolutely tell them that I had drank it before, probably like a lot. And so he turns and looks at my mom. He's like, yeah, this is who's been stealing your Crown Royal. And I was like, oh, shit. So that's how I got caught drinking the first time, was because of Crown Royal. And
that's really funny.
Yeah.
That's really good. I like that. But like I said, I mean, everybody's first set of dice, everybody's first dice bag, there's all superstitions to them. And I think everybody's first character is sacred, too.
I'd say druids were my favorite class for a long time. And I think druids in 3rd and 3-5 were pretty solid. Mm-hmm. But I remember, like, it was a druid, and then I tried ranger later, and then after that it was just all druids all the time, like trying to figure out the best way to play them. And it wasn't until like a couple years down the road I even tried anything else.
Druids were actually the most intimidating class to me. I didn't know how to really play them properly, because I knew they were like nature warriors and stuff like that. And spellcasters are already pretty hard to play. I actually can't play martial classes at all, because I think that they're like, I know that like fighter is the base go-to class that everybody goes to first, typically.
You looked at John when you said
that. Yeah, yeah. Everybody
it was recommended to me.
Everybody okay. Everybody typically goes fighter first, or some sort of martial class and whatnot. And that's not to say that they're not without merit. Like, they're primary damage dealers. They're crucial to a party.
Sure.
And
sure.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But druids have some wild stuff to them, and
literally,
like, yeah, wild shape. and I fuck wild shape, by the way.
It's so like third and 3-5 druids are maybe tied with clerics, but the most powerful class in the game. Like, once you hit, like, especially when you hit epic levels, they're so, you just can't kill them.
My first character that I actually played proper in an actual game that lasted more than a couple sessions, because my first character that wasn't myself was a large cat man who was a necromancer. But my first I'll get to him later. Yeah, different story. But my first official character that, you know, lasted all the way through epic levels and then became an immortal was a bard. My absolute all-time favorite character. He's genuinely probably the reason why I stayed with D&D for so long, because his adventures with, you know, his friends, you know, the members of my party and himself, everything that they'd get into was just so much fun. I got so attached to that character. He's just kind of become a part of me, I guess. And I feel like everybody has that one sacred character to them, even if they're not like their first character.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I have a character, like a lot of people in high school, like, know that character, and it would relate it to me. And I even went by my character's name for a little bit and thought about changing my legal name to it, which is a little crazy. It was Argo, which I thought was just...
That's actually a cool
name. Yeah, it's kind of... I didn't know it was cornstarch for the longest time, and this kid would call me cornstarch, and I'd be like, what the hell is this kid talking about? So I didn't realize that until I was like 25. But yeah, like that's it. And it was this one character that really sparked all the creativity around. And that's what started sort of any venture into like writing or even video games and stuff. Like D&D is really how I got into them.
Barlow is actually an homage to my first character.
Yeah.
Because he was a necromancer, but in order to make him a necromancer, I had to make him a cleric.
Yeah.
And so he was a cleric of Mara. I can't remember exactly what she's the goddess of, but like she's very into like parties by moonlight and stuff like that. And like whole big backstory about how he like bathed in her light and stuff like that as he grew up and whatnot. And he basically considered her like a mother to him and whatnot. And he would literally refer to her as Mother Mara.
Yeah.
And he thought that he was chaotic good. He thought he was doing the right thing, but he was absolutely 100% chaotic evil. And he was just probably the most gruesome character I've ever played. And I've played evil campaigns before. And this was not an evil campaign when I played him. They literally only kept him in the group because he was afraid that if like they told him to go away, he'd kill them. And that was, yeah, he got all the way up to level 15 before the group disbanded and whatnot. But yeah, he's a very important character of mine. I keep avoiding his name because it's an in joke, but his name's Neapolitan.
Okay.
Like the ice cream.
Yeah.
But yeah. The joke was I'm a part of a Facebook group for Skyrim and whatnot, and have been for years. And the idea was imagine being killed by somebody with a name like Neapolitan or something like that. Imagine the disgrace of being killed by a person named that. And that was the joke. So I was like, well, okay, I'll just name him the flavor of ice cream. And I just thought it was so funny when I would kill people in Skyrim as this character that I was literally playing as and then translated to D&D. So, yeah. But special characters, very important characters in my upbringing in D&D, I guess. So
I can relate. As someone who literally might be killed by ice cream in the future, I can see the shame in that. And so Barlow is like an homage to him, you said?
Yeah, so he's a Grave Domain cleric, you know, much less to where Neapolitan was into, like, killing people and then turning their remains into useful items or living abominations. Barlow is about, you know, helping people who are terminally ill or dying due to wounds and stuff like that pass between worlds as peacefully as possible and keeping people safe. So he was an homage to that in terms of, like, you know, being a cleric who wants to help people, but in a much less drastic way. I just figured I'd keep him human because, you know, there's nothing wrong with humans. And I didn't want to go too crazy with him. So he's just an homage to my first ever character.
That's really cool, man. I definitely can't wait to see more of that side of Barlow as we, you know, role play further. But I will say, I think we're going to call it there. Thanks again. Appreciate you guys sitting down, taking some extra time and talking with me.
Yeah, no problem.
I think it was kind of awesome to just sit and chat for a little bit. But thank you guys very much.
Yeah, definitely.